Oh, good evening, friends. And this is a housekeeping and announcement before Bev begins the class. These handouts will be available on this table and the table in the back as you leave. As you know, in January 2020, the church is entering into a new octave called the Journey School. And the Thursday evening Work of Inner Christianity class is the cornerstone for this school. And I just want to announce that our first gathering of the Journey School Thursday evening work class will occur on January 9th. That's Thursday, January 9th. That means that the next three Thursdays, there is no work class. Next Thursday is the Glorious Impossible. I encourage you to attend that. And then the following Thursday is right after Christmas Day. And then the following after that is New Year's week. So we will not meet for a month after tonight. And again, that January 9th will be the inauguration of the Journey School, which is the work class as the foundation for that school. Be on the lookout next week for emails and the website updates where you can register to receive the weekly curriculum for the Journey School, to register to join the Journey School, and to express any other intention to become an oblate. The Journey groups will begin sign-ups online the week of January 6th. So all this will be communicated by way of email, and also there'll be our traditional annual AIM cards available to express your intention and wish to partake in one or all of the offerings. So the main reason I'm here is just to affirm that the Work of Inner Christianity class will be the foundation for the Journey School. And there will be some adjustments to our format, and the experience of the Thursday night class will remain very, very, very similar to what it is now. The one addition, obviously, will be that whereas anyone can listen now to the recording online that is available publicly currently, the new dimension will be there will be a camera in the back which will allow for people to zoom in. We will not hear them. We will not see them. They will not see you. The camera will only capture the person sitting in this chair right behind me. And they will hear us, and they will see the class facilitator, the faculty member, or the abbess. The energy changes in a certain sense that they're in the room live. We don't know who's watching live. But I would just encourage us to think that we don't know who's listening right now online. So this is really not too different from what is already occurring. And we will have updated guidelines and best practices for sharing and keeping confidence, not using people's first or last names in our reports, just to affirm best practices, and all that will be forthcoming in the new year. But if you have any questions about this evolution of the Thursday night work class and its incorporation into the Journey School, don't hesitate to ask me. Don't hesitate to ask Bev or one of our work leaders or any board member. And you can do so by calling the church office, setting up an appointment, or emailing me. Be happy to chat further. This is a very meaningful experience to be a part of the evolution of this foundational class in the life of this church. So any comments or questions before Bev begins class? There's only one handheld at the moment. Okay, thank you everyone for your presence. I'll leave the handout here and in the back. It's the same handout.
So we begin our class In the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, and God immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. And we pray, thank you, God, for this opportunity to work. Thank you for opening us to hear, for delighting us with something new, for helping us to see something new about ourselves or about our friends or the world that brings us closer to you and closer to each other. Amen. So we'll start our class with a reading from the Gospel from yesterday, actually. It's short, so I'll read it four times. Jesus said to the crowds, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden light." Jesus said to the crowds, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden light." Jesus said to the crowds, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden light." Jesus said to the crowds, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden light." O God, when I found your words, I took them in and combined with them, and they became the happiness and joy of my heart. Amen. So what did you hear? Work ideas or what spoke to you in that familiar passage? Lee, let's get this microphone here.
I heard several things. One was those who labor, and I was thinking about mechanical man, and also yoke is a metaphor for the work. I did hear that, and I liked the part where he said, in your burden light, because it made me think of higher centers or lighter, finer matter with your burden light.
Yes. Thank you. Judith, can we have this microphone here? Thank you, Paco.
It reminded me of the work saying that the work will find a way for you, which has been a source of comfort to me frequently.
Yes, thank you. Tracy?
Along the lines of what's already been said, the yoke is like coming under authority.
Yes, thank you.
Oh. And the labor and the burdening is like the useless suffering. All those who are labored and burdened, it's the useless suffering.
Thank you. I heard light, and I saw that as a capital L light, the light of consciousness. And that's what cures the burden, so to speak. And then I heard, come, take, and learn. So the invitation, an invitation and to find one's first force, the taking, and then learning, so working on the side of knowledge. And I guess one could say the light, when you apply the work to your being, work on the side of being like we've been doing these past few weeks, the light of consciousness comes in.
I was struck with the paradox, what it seemed to me a paradox of take rest out of taking on his yoke and the work. I get that. And I'm searching for the place that it's not a paradox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I know I heard easy and I thought, is that true? It's like, has this been easy? Well, if one has the right attitude towards it, then it can be. You know, it has ease in it. Maybe looking at it that way is a little more understandable. Brings ease, for sure. I also heard rest for yourselves. Yourselves is separate. Hold the eyes. I found that if one can really put the light on them, they rest. If we can really see some of those eyes, they rest or become passive or join into deputy steward or steward. They get on board, or they can. Anything else? Yeah, Beth.
Okay, I'm a newbie, so I may be saying this all wrong.
No wrong.
The yoke, as I understand it, was a very heavy piece of equipment made from wood, and it tied two animals, usually oxen, together so that they could be in step together.
Yes.
And so when Yeshua or Jesus was saying, my yoke is light, because he was talking to farmers and people who actually used oxen. And so to say, take on my yoke, was like, don't we have enough to deal with? You know? But then when he said, my yoke is light, and it was about being in step together, mm-hmm. so that you're not fighting one another. And so it's almost like taking the eyes within us and getting them in step so that we're all heading in the right direction or the same direction. Anyway, that's kind of hit me.
That's great. Yeah, thank you. Yes, when you said that too, I felt that yoke, that yokes us to Christ. It yokes us to each other too. And then I liked how you said the eyes are in line. That's what I was saying with the rest for yourself, same kind of thing. Yeah, thank you. I always hear that Arya from the Messiah, from Messiah, Handel's Messiah, come unto me. It's this scripture. Anybody else think of that when? No. Okay. So I have a musical accompaniment in my mind with that too. Just sweet. No. I'll pass on that, thank you though. But you can look it up. Yes, Brian. The mic back, this one here back there.
So I think that when we have a camera on us, it's gonna be even more hard to share because I'm already afraid of saying something wrong, you know, but now that we've got, you know, whoever watching us from out there, at least they won't be able to see us, and you won't say Brian. It's okay.
Yeah, no. But that's a good point. No. That's a good point. Yeah, I don't, good point.
Well, I'll try to say what I was thinking. So,
yes.
Crowds, I was thinking multiplicity. And
yes,
then
okay.
When, you know, in light, I was thinking of the phrase, you know, that we do the work lightly. Mm-hmm. And when it comes into
yes.
Self-observation, non-identifying and self-remembering, if that's applied to multiplicity, then essence can grow. We make more room for that. And then we become lighter as we become not so heavy with self.
Yes. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. And the other image, when you said we become lighter, is how Gurdjieff used to talk about all the overcoats of the eyes, the personality, all these overcoats. So you take them off, literally get lighter. Yeah. You want to say anything more? No? Okay. Thank you. Yeah, and about the camera, you guys must be ready for it because it appear. You know, if it's going to appear, it's you're the perfect people to to work with that. Another layer of work. So, but just think of it being here. We get seen. So,
yeah. Did I'm sorry that
yeah, go ahead
that we don't have to know everything perfectly to share.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, because this is a class.
It's a class, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who knows anything perfectly? Nobody here. So we're all students. We all, no matter where we're sitting here. Thank you. But I understand the trepidation around it. So isn't it funny, though? It's our minds go to a future imagination of what that'll be like. Nothing changed. There's nothing going to be different here, except there's going to be something back there that it's just like a box with. I mean, we don't know right now who's going to be listening after this goes out on the website, you know, but isn't it funny what the mind does with that? It's so interesting. I guess we wouldn't. I guess you can go, yes, or yes. I don't know, it feels funny, but that's a good question. We haven't talked about that yet. So that's something we need to discuss. Yeah. I mean, I remember several classes where Donald would do that. He wouldn't say people's names. But then we kind of went back and forth with it. So, yeah. Seems like it would be, why would we have a double standard, you know? But we'll see. Yeah. Anything else about the scripture? Hey, thank you for sharing that. Okay, so our homework for the week was to continue to work on the side of being, and in whatever way was useful for you. And then at some point when you're identified, or when you were identified during the week, to identify a stressful thought related to that identification and to bring it with you. So I'm going to go around. We're each going to say something, hopefully. So let's do that. How many of you did that and you're prepared for that? Okay. So I think we can all do this in the moment, all right? So is there anyone here who didn't get identified at all this week? Okay, good. So you can all participate. All right, so go back to a moment. Let's do a meditation for a moment here, all right? Go back to a moment in your week and find a place where you were identified. It can be a big blow up in your emotional life, or it can be very, very subtle. It doesn't matter. But just where your body cued you in that something was off, or your thought was not in line with how you would love to be, or not in line with love. We can put judgment or whatever. Okay, can everybody find a moment? And then anchor yourself there and just see if you can find a thought that was associated with that. I mean, it can be really simple, like, she shouldn't do that. Or, he did that wrong. Or, I don't like her dress. It doesn't have to be, we're not trying to be spiritual here. We're just trying to see with scathing self-honesty just what lives in there. It's not us. The thoughts are not us. Okay, we're just finding one stressful thought. And when you found one, raise your hand. Keep your hand up. Okay. All right. Good. So let's take this microphone here. If you didn't find one, or you would rather not say it, you can say pass and just pass the microphone. So let's start with Jim here.
I found myself on the basis of a critique of one of my workers that I wasn't doing something that others did to forward their career and to forward their business development, that I all of a sudden I went, wait a minute, how come I'm not like them? And then I broke out of that and went, no, this is my way. And in the moment, I let it diminish me and take away my creativity and take away my esteem. And it took me several minutes, maybe an hour, to climb back out of that and get back on top of who I was and my self-expression.
So what was the thought? It was, they're better than me?
The thought was, I'm wrong for not doing it their way.
Okay, there you go. comfort.
And yeah. I went, no, if I'm always being pulled in a divine direction and he's got a hold of it, my way is just another way. And it's the one for me.
Okay.
It took me a while to climb out of that.
Yeah. So, yeah, we don't have to go into the situation or the story around it, which I didn't say that. So mm-hmm. we could just say the thought. Okay, so we're going to pass it to...
Thank you.
I don't know your name. Alexander. Thank you, Jim.
The judgment is, why can't she just clean up right?
Thank you.
The thought was...
Right by your chin here.
The thought was, I'm not doing it right. Or I can't do it right. And then just beneath that, I realized that there was a sense of being lost. And what I realized is that if my head doesn't know how to do it, then I panic. So the identity, I think, is with my head. Mm-hmm. And that's as far as I got.
No, that's good. We just need the thought. Thank you, Beth. Yeah, this problem is our heads.
The thought I experienced was, man, it's been a rough day. I need a drink. And I think I'll have one on the way home. And of course, there were many thoughts that came after that because I had a real good three-centered observation and went home very successfully without buying that drink at the gas station.
Thank you.
My thought was sort of, I guess it's twofold. Why does it have to be so hard? And I should be able to handle this better.
Thank you.
I'm afraid that my son will end up like my father, and that if I had been a better mother, I would have been able to protect him from the family gene pool.
Thank you.
That's not fair. And how many times did I tell my children over the years, life isn't fair?
Thank you.
Mine was a judgment, a thought towards someone that everyone knows that.
Thank you.
Went through about three permutations of dealing with what I felt were inappropriate expectations. And each time that engagement improved what we were doing, and the person was very pleased and happy at having it dealt with in a way that improved the situation. And I ran into this person and she was happy and I felt resentment toward her.
So what was the thought?
Resentment.
That's a feeling.
Okay.
What belief is causing the...
I think it's just a inappropriate expectations. That's probably not a very good thought either.
What does it come from? You believe that she
maybe it's a superiority, you know, in the situation. And let me think about it. I don't know if I know right now.
Okay, just sit with it.
Sure.
See, you can raise your hand again. It is hard sometimes to identify them. Yes. And your name is?
My name's Dayton.
Hi, Dayton.
My thought was, why don't you make the decision? But it wasn't about me, though. It was about
another.
person.
No, that's okay. Why don't you make the decision? Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
My thought was, oh no, I think I'm in trouble. .. again.
Thank you.
I do the F it, I don't want to.
Thank you.
Who does she think she is?
Thank you.
The company that I work for used to be a reflection of the owner, which was, we were one big family, and it got bought out recently by corporate America, and everyone is resentful. And I just had to join in, and this morning I made the comment that M employed people, and the company that bought us out has employees. We're not people anymore. And I just had to join in on the misery.
Okay, thank you.
This thought applies to many situations. It is, there's something wrong here, and it's up to me to fix it.
Thank you.
My thought was, I feel anxious. Why do I feel anxious? What do I do to stop feeling anxious? And realizing that the anxiety had to do with fear about the future and not really with anything that was actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Can we get back to talking about what I need to talk about?
Thank you.
I've been bringing my dogs here now for 4 years, and you're making me wait an hour and a half.
Thank you.
After years of setting the example, why can't she just pick up on it instead of us having to have another argument?
Thank you.
I had a thought, this isn't fair. I've waited 9.5 years with no change.
Thank you.
Scarcity versus trusting.
Is it a scarcity thought?
It was more of a, frustration, like, I can't believe this. Just being able to step back from that, and then it seems like it's worked itself out.
But the initial thought was, I can't believe this.
Frustration.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Well, at first it was, why aren't women valued more? And there was a lot of anger and blame directed at somebody else. And then it really was, why am I not valued more?
Thank you.
Why am I dependent on somebody else's opinion about what is?
Thank you.
Can't you do anything right?
Yes.
Okay, and towards someone at my office, why in the world do you have to talk all the time?
Thank you. Ted, would you like to share? Mary, could you walk it back to the sound booth? He had his hand up.
I don't want to deal with this shit.
Thank you. Thank you. It was that microphone, right? Yeah. Okay, so let's pass it all the way over here. Mine was, my granddaughter shouldn't be so manipulative. That was given to me today. So did anyone hear anything unusual? Any like new thoughts in there? No, right? Rusty, did you find a thought, a specific thought? Are you, there you go. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. So we would say that each of these are an expression of an I, right? An I, this is what it believes, it's thinking in the moment. That's the thought, right? And each of those thoughts has a sensation in the body and an emotion that goes with it, right? So let's just, in the moment, do a three-centered observation on your particular thought that you had, all right? So just drop into the body for a moment. If you can get back there, anchor yourself back in the situation where you were believing that, or a situation where you believed that. And where did you feel it in the body? And just, you can just speak it out loud, and I'll say, in the belly, chest, chest, throat, shoulders, yeah, the jaw, yeah, gut. Shallow breath. Tight neck. Panic. How does that feel in the body? So you feel enervated, just weak. Good. So now that was the body. Now a feeling. Now, you know, we put words to feelings. Really, feelings, it's hard to describe, but we have words for different emotions. So what was the emotion that came up? And you can speak that out as well.
Fear.
Fear. Anger. Sadness, impatience, frustration. What was that? Pettiness.
Distrust.
Anxiety.
Despair.
Powerlessness. Lost. Depression, irritation, impatience, contempt, hatred, annoyance, yes. Yeah, close your eyes and go back to that moment. Really feel everything that you're feeling. Three-centered, there's the thoughts. There might be other thoughts that engenders or that spawns. I know for me often it can go into self-criticism, and there's a whole host of other thoughts that go along with it. So you can just notice those if they come up. But really have a three-centered observation of this particular eye. Anchoring yourself in that moment, really being there.
So as you sit in that, you know, ask yourself, is what I'm believing true? Can I really know that it's true? And just sit with that. Yes is fine, no is fine. Okay, so really get clear on that thought again, and now meditate on who are you without this thought? If you can't think that thought, if it's gone, who are you in that situation without the thought? If you can't think it, if it's not there, how does that moment look different? How are you different? How do you feel differently? Or how would you, if you didn't have that thought, how would it be different? Who would like to share? Jim. That one. Oh, did somebody turn it off? Oh, okay.
Present and peaceful.
Yes, thank you. You don't turn it off. Just leave it where it is on. Good, thank you. Who else? Yes, let's use this microphone.
Relief and successful. I think what you're saying is when you work through your observation, how can you go from it? How can you learn from it? Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what we're seeing, what you want to see is the contrast between
right.
when you believe the thought
yeah.
and when you don't believe the thought.
Mm-hmm.
So with the thought, this is how I feel, and without it, mm-hmm. so, yeah, just to see that. Paco?
So my thought was, you know, why does it have to be so hard? I should be able to handle this. Mm-hmm. And without that thought, I would realize that I can't do. And that would allow me just to be present.
Yeah.
And just let it is.
How would the body feel differently?
Much more relaxed.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, Nancy.
I would feel free and light.
Yeah. Good. Pass it back. Ellen and Judith.
Well, my comment was to several people with the purpose of it being so that I could fit in, so I could belong. What was kind of interesting about it was I knew that what I was doing was silly and wrong, or it was mechanical as I was doing it.
Yes, you had an inner taste.
Right.
Yes.
But I was doing it so I could fit in, and I guess if I didn't do it, I might feel somewhat isolated or estranged.
Hmm. So there are thoughts to question, too.
Do what?
There are thoughts to question, too. I don't fit in, is that true? You don't fit in, is that true? Really?
Right. Yeah, no, right.
Yeah, it's just other things to look at, that's all, other thoughts. Yeah, thank you. Judith?
Yeah, it seems to me like this is a process that can be used in service of non-identification in the work?
Yes.
And for me, what I describe, there's something wrong and it's up to me to fix it. That is my chief feature, or such a kingpin in this personality. Yes. Mm-hmm. It leads to fear, right, and the anxiety my sister was talking about. So without those, if I non-identify, I am not the Judith anymore. I'm much closer to real I, yes, and I can relax.
Yes.
And I can see what's perfect in this moment, and I can experience gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yes, back here. Tell me your name for the light.
Suzanne.
Suzanne.
I would feel compassion, mm-hmm, external consideration instead of internal consideration, and I would be light and free.
Thank you. Okay, Tracy.
The thought I have about F it, I don't want to, is about wearing a seatbelt.
Okay.
And I'm working lately with the idea of willing, not getting my way on purpose. Mm-hmm. And I am putting my seatbelt on after I have the idea of I don't want to. And I'm not calm. I'm sitting there kind of seething that I have to not get my way. So there's not relief, there's not even more non-identifying, there's just sort of grunting through, willing, not getting my way.
Well, let's go back to the moment where you don't have your seatbelt on yet, and you don't want to, okay, before you even do anything with it. Let's put that other exercise to the side for a moment, okay? So you're in that moment, and you're angry about having to put your seatbelt on. So if you couldn't think that you're mad about it, or that I shouldn't have to put my seatbelt on, is that kind of what it is? If you couldn't even think that, can you go there? Imagine what it would be like if you couldn't even think that.
Well, yeah, yes and no, because... Are you saying non-identifying, the seatbelt just goes on without any thought? Or are you saying non-identifying, don't put the seatbelt on?
No, I'm not saying anything.
I mean, like, if I don't even have the thought, that means I'm not even thinking about having to put a seatbelt on.
Yeah, that could be. If you're not angry about it, what would that, if you're not feeling angry or you don't have the thought, what would, because you could still have a preference of not putting the seatbelt on without any identification, right? I mean, it's just a preference. So if you were to then do the exercise of working, you know, saying, okay, I'm going to do it anyway. Would it feel different?
That I was just reporting that that's not what's occurring. There's still, like, there's not any non-identification. There's not liking it, and there's not liking even doing it. Mm-hmm. There's just not liking going on.
Okay. Well, there are other thoughts there then that are triggering it. So might be interesting to sit with that more.
I mean, the only little crack of non-identification would be not totally not caring and not wearing a seatbelt. Or
would
totally
that be non-identification?
Or totally not caring and wearing a seatbelt. Hmm. Like having no thought about it, which I bet most people don't. I don't know, does anybody else struggle with the seatbelt thing?
We have our other struggles. Thank you. Thank you. Who else? Yeah, Bob. You can. That's okay to use that one. He's right in the middle.
You know, I was speaking about taking the dogs to the vet, and what it, I got as we proceeded with this, it occurred to me that I was irritated out of a sense of entitlement, and then I got to thinking about that entitlement, and underneath that was a sense of not being worthy. And what I felt was surprise. Mm-hmm. I've always assumed I was entitled, but it sounds like underneath there is, I mean, that's apparently a defense mm-hmm. for something deeper. Wow.
So I'm unworthy. If you couldn't think that thought, what would it be like now?
Well, it would be it would be a new life. My goodness. Yeah. What a nice feeling. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. Val, let's use this microphone now.
Wow, that's exactly what I was feeling. I just feel this wonderful feeling. If I didn't have those thoughts, I wrote down, I would be peaceful and happy. Om Shalom Shanti Paz. Peace, peace, peace. I'm sorry, I have to sing that. I mean, I'd go about my day so light. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, this is just like really sunk in right now. And I want this to be my work. Because I'm so sick of what I think about and it drowning me and trying to take me out, that I just want to just sing that song. I've been singing it for a long time anyway, but bring it back in and just, I can just so see the useless suffering and going round and round and spiraling. And now I'm starting to just see the work of sing the song. If that's all I have to do to get out of that, just sing the song mm-hmm. and get out of it, and get up. And I just want that to be my work right now. I'm just so grateful mm-hmm. that it just came, just like the light just came and hit me or mm-hmm. something. Yeah. So and I'm just grateful for that song as well, because it does put you in a great place. So that's my work. That's what I want to do right now for however long it takes.
Thank you. Brian.
The short version of it for me is a question that I've found very useful to ask myself is, what is it I'm afraid of? Mm-hmm. Almost any time that I'm disturbed, I've just found it very useful to, if I don't like being disturbed, it's usually a pretty easy thing for me to identify.
Yes.
I can ask myself that question, and then by asking that question, it seems like it shines light on it.
Yes.
And it kind of goes back to what I said earlier was not trusting. And if I can say, okay, yeah, I am afraid, and there's all sorts of types of fears, some small, some large, but there's usually some sort of fear there.
Yes.
And, worried about not having enough. Oh, I'm afraid that my long-term plan for myself is not going to pan out. You know, I'm not trusting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, move on.
Right. So who are you without the thought that my long-term plan won't pan out?
Well, ideally, I'm less of myself and a child of God.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you feel into living a life with no fear?
Momentarily.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's ever completely gone.
Right.
But what is the saying that we have in church that or they one of the songs that they would sing is you are the potter, I'm the clay. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Being open to that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the path to a fearless life is working on each fear that comes up, working with fear. I've also seen that for me, the hardest thing for me to feel is fear. It's really difficult when it's really deep fear, like working on the fear of a grandchild dying on my watch or something. You know, I mean, those thoughts come up. My deepest fears of things like that. And going into it and questioning it, you know, and really seeing who I am without that thought. And what, if in that situation, who would I be without that thought? That I was responsible or that I was, you know, just, questioning things that we just, that seems crazy, but just each one, and it can be little. It's like, she shouldn't do that. Really? You know, who am I without that? So to me, to sit in that question of who am I without this thought, or who would I be without my story about this person, event, thing, whatever, is a path to self-remembering in addition to self, to a non-identification. Because if I'm not in that stressful thought, it's like you were feeling Bob, it's like Ho or Val or, you know, whoever got that feeling, it's a different life. It's closer to feeling that real I, like Judith said. Yeah. Yes, Duberly. This is Mike. Oh, Tracy.
It makes me think of the scripture again. Jesus is talking to the crowds, and every thought you guys had, I mean, that crowd lives inside here too, at least the majority of the thoughts you shared. And interestingly, Jesus says, my yoke, and to me that implies that everybody has a yoke, but mine happens to be light. And when the same event is different without that crowd, everything gets lighter, everything that people said, yeah. Peace and love and lightness and openness, and that's the lighter yoke.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he has a yoke though, no less, meaning that we're all the way down here living life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Lauren.
I have the other mic, even though I'm on the wrong side. That was helpful, Duberly, but because the yoke of the question, how am I doing, mm-hmm. which is some of us have learned, many of us ask, it's our big question, how am I doing? And after you've asked that question as many times as I have, and kept looking for X or Y or Z answer. I was trying to, when you asked, well, what was that feeling like in your body? And I remember the first marathon I ran at 19th or 20th Street, it turned out to be coming back almost of the 19th or 20th mile, just before you get to back to Manhattan, or get to Manhattan in the New York Marathon, I hit the wall, as they say. That's how I feel when I'm in this place of realizing that I'm looking for someone, to tell me, you're doing fine. Mm. And the other day it happened, and I was lucky enough to be with someone who was able to say without a lot of, was able to say that the world is fine. We're fine. And somehow or other, I got the feeling that I sometimes get when I'm not in this exhausted place. And I mean, the feeling in my body was having gotten my wind back, you know, for however many more steps I have to go this day or to finish that race or whatever. And so the feeling is that this other person, like the example that we have in Yeshua, is that somebody can lift the yoke for you. And so I ended up feeling so grateful and light, like I had my wind back. That was the feeling I got.
Thank you. Anyone else before we move on? Peter, right behind you.
You know, my thought was not good enough, or can't you do anything right? And I think without that thought, there'd be acceptance and peaceful.
Yeah.
Accepting and peaceful.
Yeah, how would your body feel differently?
How's the body?
How would your body feel differently without the thought?
Fancy.
Yeah. Thank you. Tracy? Nope. Okay.
I just have a question because I understand about non-identifying, but this, you know, it seems to bypass the conscious suffering part. You know, if I could just not have these thoughts, then I'd be, like, in bliss. But where's conscious suffering fit in there?
It's in sitting in meditating on that moment and doing your three-centered observation of seeing the suffering, because you're identifying a stressful thought. So you are exploring that. That's conscious suffering to me, is you're feeling it in the body. You're feeling the emotions, or you're seeing the emotions. I mean, you're not identifying because you're looking at it, but you can still be feeling all of that. And you're seeing all the thoughts that it generates past that. To me, that's conscious suffering.
Yeah, I hope we're not talking to like a one and done. You know, like these are thoughts that we've all had for decades and for generations, and it's not a quick fix.
No one says it's a quick fix. But when we feel stress in the body, when we're feeling the stress, when we have these stressful thoughts, that's unconscious suffering. So when we explore it, when we look at them in a loving way, to really feel them and understand them, that just allows that particular thought to, it's like Bernadette says, it gets cut off at the root. You know, it still might kind of flap around a little, or it won't. But I don't believe that we have to suffer. There's a way, that's why we're here, you know, to me.
With these really painful thoughts that are based on fear or hurt or anger that are old, it seems that there is a spiritual purpose in bearing the recurring manifestation of it and having wish and will, but not really having, you know, we don't work for results. We just work. We just bear.
Right. Well, this is still, when you, I mean, This is just working on them. It's the same as any other kind of work to me. But you, I mean, the thing is that to me, again, sitting in the thought, if I don't have this thought, it's to realize that I'm suffering because I keep believing this. Can I understand it so that that doesn't have to be there anymore, that particular belief? It's just pulling one string out of the knot or the web of suffering.
Yeah, I think we just, there's, you know, the benefit of conscious suffering and the, you know, no benefit of unconscious suffering.
Right, right. Like I said, maybe we just are seeing it differently. I see it as conscious suffering, as consciously looking at my suffering. Bringing consciousness to my suffering. Thank you. Anything else? Yeah, Lauren?
Did I not hear you say that when we bring light on it, its roots, I mean, or it evaporates or it gets lighter, so that suffering seems to be around in some kind of a permanent basis. Maybe that's what Satan stands for or sits for or whatever.
Could be right.
but on the other hand, if there's this particular thing that has for many, many years been a heaviness in your life and you really see it, you bring light to it, then you can go suffer somewhere else, you know.
Right, so, yeah, you move on to the next. Yeah. Right, it's the emotional center. The work is about purification of the emotional center, which is where we suffer, seems to me. Well, and in the intellectual center, it's really, suffering is only because of what we're thinking and believing, how we label it. To me, anyway. Yes. Suzanne.
I sometimes think there are many layers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sometimes, even though you've peeled off one layer, it's nuanced. Oh, and yeah. So a deeper layer comes up. So it seems like the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. But it's something deeper that you learn each time. So
right.
I guess that, in a way, that's why it's not one and done a lot for the deeper stuff, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of layers to it.
Right. And I would also offer that if you sit with something long enough, with that one belief and see all of its tentacles, or as many as possible, I think it's possible to dissolve those, you know. But I agree. I think it is, there are layers.
Sometimes you don't see them all at once, right?
No. No, right. So you might just see one little thing. And we don't do it. The light is what cures, you know. So that's God's business, how we get transformed. And if we need to see it again, we will. So, and that's a gift. Yeah, but you're totally right. There, I think these core things can take a lot of work. Or sometimes, you know, who knows? There's grace and it doesn't. So, but yeah, thank you. Okay. Let's move on. Thank you all. Thank you for playing with that. It was nice to hear all your voices tonight. It really was. So now the ice has been broken for those of you who never spoken before, and now you can do that, even with a camera there. Okay. So the next commentary is a quick one. Further work on identifying. Woohoo! This is on page 1444. 1445 in volume 4. It's entitled Absence of Resentment and the Practice of Considerateness. In the practical directions given in the Sermon on the Mount, after poor in spirit comes the word meek. This word in Greek means not to resent your enemies. Hence the strange expression, love your enemies, do good to them that hate you, becomes more understandable if it means not to resent what they say or do. In this work, we might say, not to react mechanically. Last time we spoke of poor in spirit, chiefly from the standpoint of not identifying. But a resentful man or woman is continually becoming identified through resentment. We were speaking of poor in spirit as a contrast to the rich man, which Mr. Ouspensky defined as the identified man, meaning that the rich man is a kind of man or woman who is very identified with everything, with their virtues, goodness, meritoriousness, charitable actions, talents, cleverness, appearance, position, possessions, and so, per contra, with their setbacks, negative moods, failures, etc. In short, they are identified with the prevailing pictures of themselves. These they carry in the album of themselves and constantly glance at even in the most crowded moments of life, aided, as often as not, by an actual mirror. By the way, notice how you look in a mirror. What is really you is not that. It always weakens self-remembering because it causes identifying, but it also can correct your picture. Now, if a rich man, that is, psychologically speaking, a man who is very identified, could change his feeling of I, he would cease to be very identified. But this idea applies to everyone in the work, i.e. that it is necessary to change the habitual feeling of I, which can be compared with a center of gravity. Or better, to a single room, brightly lighted in a large house, where the other rooms are in total darkness or dimly lit. Such a man's energies are not spread over his being, but localized to one part of himself, as it were, to one room in the great three-story house of himself. So he or she identifies through not having a balancing of centers, whereby forces are equally distributed throughout the physical and psychological organization. In such a case, to quote one of the, quote, sayings of Christ, found comparatively recently on the west coast of the Red Sea at Oxyrhynchus, the person has not made the sides of himself all equal. Quote, if ye make not the below into the above, and the above into the below, the right into the left, and the left into the right, the before into the behind, and the behind into the before, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of God. That's interesting, isn't it? As we are, things are not equal. One side is bigger than another. One preoccupation absorbs too much force and becomes an obsession or some form of fanaticism and starves something else, which is quite contrary to the idea of balanced man, number four man. Before a man can enter, and I was thinking of changing all the names of man, woman, or whatever, just this is the way he wrote. Before a man can enter the conscious circle of humanity, he needs to study for long in what respects he is not balanced, and that is to study what in himself takes too much and what in himself receives too little. Only in this way can he begin to submit to the balancing forces coming from higher centers via buried conscience, which we gradually hear better if we can bear to be changed, which few can. Now, to return to the word translated as meek, in the instructions about how to attain the inner peace or bliss which belongs to the conscious circle, blessed are the meek. This refers to an inner state, not to an outer posturing, a modest look. It means a state of absence from resentment. To add, if we resent, as we largely do mechanically, we cannot practice external considering. This work word appears in the New Testament as considerateness. Through absence from resentment and the practice of considerateness, for no one is considerate towards a person whom he resents, there is revealed that form of love called in the work conscious love, which is represented in the New Testament by the word, whatever that is. It's a Greek word. It is through this chain that a man reaches first absence from resentment and second, as a result, conscious considering, so that he can, quote, love his enemy. He will certainly be no longer one-sided and so unbalanced. Much will have developed in him. Many rooms will be now lit up. His former feeling of I will be transformed, his consciousness increased. Conscious love clearly implies consciousness, and we have all listened to some of the means of attaining it, beginning with self-observation. There is a lot in that commentary. A lot. I just wanted to read, I'll make it just one. Let's see. I wanted to read about external considering because isn't that perfect for this holiday coming up? Conscious love. I mean, there's many things we can practice in here, but external considering is one. If you really feel you want to go for the gusto, we can also practice conscious love, if you know what that is. So let's see here. All right, so I just wanted to read a couple of things about external considering. External considering is based upon an entirely different relationship towards people from internal considering. It is an adaptation towards people to their understanding, to their requirements. By considering externally, a man or a woman does that which makes life easy for other people and for him or herself. And another one. In the practice of external considering, it is necessary to realize that other people are mirrors of ourselves. If you have taken an album of good photographs of yourself through long self-observation, then you will not have to look far in it to find in yourself that you object to so much in the other person, and then you will be able to put yourself in the other person's position to realize that he or she has also this thing that you have noticed in yourself, that he or she has his or her inner difficulties just as much as you have, and so on. External considering can be practiced when you are alone. I will give you one example. Go over carefully what you said to someone and put yourself in his place by visualizing him saying the same things to you and using the same intonation. Yeah. External considering is as vast and as varied in its range as is internal considering. There cannot be right development of the emotional center without the practice of external considering. Ted, cut me off for a second. Evaluation of this work and the practice of external considering develop emotional center. The more you value this work, the less can the false part of you, what we've called false personality in the past, govern you. the less vanity can you have. And the more you externally consider, the less important will you think yourself. All right, so there's a little bit of external considering there about external considering. So again, our homework will be to practice external considering. But if you're new to the work, there's a whole bunch of things in this particular commentary that I just read on page 1445 that you can work on. And if you prefer to do that, that's fine too. Read this commentary over, find some things in it you want to work on. There was, I picked out a bunch of stuff, like notice your mechanicality and aim to be non-mechanical. Look in the mirror and notice your thoughts. Where is my feeling of I? What is my feeling of I now? Study what takes too much and receives too little in yourself. I thought that was a very interesting way you put that. You can observe resentment. You can practice self-observation. Lots of things in there. You can practice, if you don't want to use external consideration, you can practice considerateness. He even used that term, which isn't used much in the commentaries. Or absence of resentment. Practice it that way. Maybe if you use it in a different way, it makes a little bit more sense. And if that feels all like way too much, you can just practice self-observing, non-identifying, and self-remembering. Yes. Yes, it's volume 4, page 1445. Yeah. Any questions? Comments? Okay, great. So there's a basket in the back. And for anyone who wants to put their tithes or offerings in it. And even if we're not, let's just take a moment to feel the abundance in our lives, the abundance of grace that God pours down on us at every second, the grace of the amazing teachings we've been given here, the gift of our brothers and sisters that walk with us on this journey, and the love that we share. And we remember together that God's love has always met and will always meet all our needs. We give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed we are to simply remember God. Amen. Wish you all wonderful, blessed, peaceful, joyful Christmas. Happy New Year. See you in church. Thank you. So remember, next meeting is January 9th. Come possible next week. I don't know what time that is. Yeah, it'll be a little bit.